Welcome back, 1144, 1260 WRC, Andy Parks, live from the Washington Times. All right, Ann, the heck with you. You already got your own Powerball ticket. I'll go in halvesy with Stephen Dinan on one, $400 million. You want to throw a buck into it, Stephen?
Nah, it's not enough for me. When it gets over a billion, you know. A billion here, eventually you're talking about real money.
Yeah, you're one of those guys that even if you did win, you'd still go to work the next day.
I wouldn't know what to do with myself. I really wouldn't.
I know. You'd be bored to tears.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah, lots to talk about. Minimum wage hike would kill 500,000 jobs. It's so funny seeing the contrast in headlines or the coverage of this, because the CBS Evening News last night made headlines on their own for not mentioning that part of the CBO's report. They only mentioned the fact that 900,000 or whatever the number was could be lifted up out of poverty. They never mentioned it could kill 500,000 jobs. So, you know, there's quite a contrast when you look at your headline, minimum wage hike will kill 500,000 jobs.
Yeah, you know, as I was driving in this morning, I was listening to a radio newscast that also led with the White House that, you know, the CBO has good news for the White House and talked about the people who would be lifted out of poverty. And
yeah,
that's absolutely true. That is in the CBO does find that. I guess, you know, of course, it entirely depends on your perspective. If you are looking at this from the perspective of, okay, we're in the middle of a 5-year sluggish economy, the focus, all sides agree that the focus should be on jobs and the unemployment rate, well, then you'd think that the biggest news would be this will hurt jobs, and
yeah,
so much so that you're talking 500,000. So that's what I went with, and I can defend that. I understand why other people would go with a different one, but the news in this is not so much that the minimum wage will help low-income workers. That's sort of that to me is a dog bites man sort of story. The thing that's interesting, the thing we might not have expected, the thing that is hotly debated in all of this is not that low-income workers will be getting more money. It's that, okay, what happens to the job market? The big economic question has always been, if you raise the minimum wage, do workers, first of all, do businesses stop employing some of those low-income people because they have to in order to make up the money they're paying to other people, and what are the knock-on effects of that? And CBO says they reviewed all the literature, and the broad consensus is that if you raise the minimum wage to $10.10 an hour by 2016, you're talking about 500,000 fewer jobs then. It could be as high as 1 million. It could be right about, basically a break even. Those are the two outliers. The average, somewhere in the middle, you know, the two-thirds confidence point is that you would lose about 500,000 jobs. That comes on top of, obviously, who knows what the unemployment rate will look like in 2016. But as of right now, we're still above 6.5%, and all sides say they're trying to grow jobs. You'd think that would be a very important thing for all sides to take note of.
All right, let's talk about the Democrats' reaction to the CBO report yesterday. What was it?
So, and this is why, another reason why, you know, I'm comfortable with the headline I went with. Democrats, the White House hastily scheduled a conference call in order to reply to this, knowing that unemployment number looked really bad in the middle of this debate, which is the reason why it's pretty clear. You know, the White House knew what the headline was going to be out of this. I'm amazed that they managed to convince some news organizations what they wanted the headline to be, and that those news organizations agreed to that. But neither here nor there. The White House's reaction was, hey, pay more attention to the fact that we are lifting people out of poverty, that overall you're talking about a good deal for a lot of low-income workers. They also then went ahead and took some gentle swipes at CBO, saying that CBO's numbers are outside of the mainstream economic consensus. We actually had a breakfast. There was a reporter's breakfast with the Doug Elmendorf, the director of CBO Today, and he, a very nice, very polite, very smart guy, who also gently pushed back on the White House and said, yeah, well, you know, here are all the numbers again. This is absolutely within the economic consensus. In fact, you know, his whole point is that they review all of the literature that's come out, including some very recent studies on this, and that's why they go through and they say the numbers I mentioned just a minute ago, the 500,000 jobs lost, that's sort of the center point. There's a 1/6 chance that you would actually have zero or positive job outcomes out of this. There's a 1/6 chance you'd have more than 1 million jobs lost. So it's the sort of the 2/3 interval between 1 million jobs and a few jobs lost, and the 500,000 number is dead in the middle of that. That's how they come up with that. That's based on all of the economic literature, and so they say, you know, by definition, they are in the middle of the economic consensus.
All right, and the Republicans' reaction was, see, we told you so?
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, the reason all this matters is because Democrats obviously are making unemployment, the minimum wage, actually they're making both of those big fights, but the minimum wage is the next one to come. House Democrats have actually said they're going to launch one of these official discharge petition drives to try and force House Republicans to deal with it there. In the Senate, where Democrats are in control, they've said they'll bring a bill that looks very similar to what the CBO studied, this $10.10 an hour minimum wage. They're going to bring that bill to the floor and force a vote on it. I think that the CBO report probably makes it unlikely that bill, basically this stiffens Republican spines. This gives them a lot of ammunition to go back to their constituents and say, at a time when we've got an unemployment rate where it is and our focus is on creating jobs and we're worried about the Obama economy and what it's done to jobs, the last thing we would do, even if it does help some low-income people, the last thing we would do is go ahead and kill more jobs.
Yeah. And there are some people say, well, if you raise the minimum wage to 10-10, you're also going to raise the poverty level, you know, the classification of the poverty level as well. So anyway.
Sure. You know, one other thing on that, which is that, you know, there is something to be said for the fact that, what the minimum wage is, all the CBO estimate and all these economic estimates say, essentially it's a straight wealth transfer. Those at the very top will end up with slightly lower incomes overall. Those at the bottom end, on the whole, will end up with higher incomes overall. This all happens without much change to the federal budget. So it's a sort of a budget-neutral way to transfer money from the top, from high earners to low earners. Having said that, there are, and the CBO didn't quantify exactly how many, but there are low-wage workers right now who will lose their jobs and not be able to get other low-wage jobs because of this change. So it's essentially the government very specifically picking not individual people winners and losers, but picking winners and losers among the low-wage workers.
Mm-hmm. All right, I want to get to another story you worked on. For federal employees, office closed 25% of fiscal year so far. That definitely got my attention. I knew there was a reason deep down inside I wanted a job with the federal government. Great pay, benefits, and tons of time off, right?
Yeah, you know, this is one of those things. They get 10 official holidays every year already.
Yeah.
This year, there's obviously with the weather, there's been a lot of a number of snow closures, delayed openings, flexible work, that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
But, you know, the big thing that's happened in this fiscal year has been the government shutdown, when a number of them, more than 1 million, were sent home, weren't allowed to work, in fact were forbidden to even do so much as pick up a work BlackBerry, but ended up getting paid for that time. And so it's one of these crazy things where, you know, in some ways you feel sorry for them having to put up with Congress and some of the craziness of the budgeting, which leaves them you know, open to these problems. But yeah, still, I mean, out of all these work days, you know, 105 work days through yesterday in the fiscal year, they've only worked about 77 of those, and that's pretty stunning. You know,
yeah.
Maybe more interesting to everyone is the fact that Congress, and this is a calendar year, not a fiscal year, so since January 1st, Congress hasn't had a full week of work yet. In fact, the House has met for only 17 of the 35 weekdays since the beginning of the year, and the Senate has only met for 18 of those, so right about 50% work time for both the House and Senate.
They really are do nothing, aren't they?
do very little, and when they're here, you know, you can sort of have your opinions about what they're doing, but, having said that, I always have to remind folks of I've never actually been able to figure out who the originator of this thing was, but it's an old saying, goes back to the 19th century, that never is your wallet or your pocketbook in more danger when the legislature is in session.
Yes, I have heard that. All right, Stephen, as always, thanks for your help. Appreciate it.
My pleasure.
See you. Stephen Dinan, Washington Times political editor, 11:53 at 1260 WRC. Andy Parks live from the Washington Times.